Here are the WGXC headlines for Tuesday, February 28th. Nine candidates, including incumbent Lori Lightfoot, are running for mayor of Chicago in the final day of voting, February 28th. Self-help author Marianne Williamson, who is 70, is the first major Democrat to announce they are running against Joe Biden for president. A Fox News host says he's not allowed to cover Dominion Voting System's $1.6 billion defamation lawsuit against Fox, and mentioned that hosts regularly reported news that they knew was false. An overwhelming majority of New York registered voters said they believe U.S. Representative George Santos should resign, according to a new Siena College poll of New York voters. Even a majority of Republicans and conservatives think Santos, who has been caught in many lies, should leave Congress. Tannersville's Deputy Mayor Gregory Landers has resigned for personal reasons, Mayor Lee McGonigal said February 27th. Two Tannersville trustees, John Gallagher and Kim Thompson, recently revealed they don't live in the village, a potential violation of election law. And Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson says he is running for a third two-year term, but he may not complete that term as he is considering a primary challenge to Assemblyperson Dede Barrett next year.
This is Don Letts, and you're listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Accra. Stay tuned.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Spike's Record Rack in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
There are many closings and delays today. Let's get to some of the most important. 18 Degrees Childcare in Berkshire County is closed. Albany City Schools are saying they're open, but it's kind of a misnomer. They're doing full distance learning for all students today, so they're Zooming in or web streaming in Albany, not attending in person. Berkshire Community College is closed. No morning classes, no day classes. Evening class decision will be made by 1 p.m. Berkshire Hills Regional School District is closed. The Berkshire Montessori School is closed. The Berkshire Waldorf School is closed. In Rensselaer County, the Berlin School District has closed school. In Albany County, the Burn Knox Westerloo School District has closed. In Albany County, the Bethlehem schools are delayed 2 hours. There is no AM BOCES. Brunswick in Rensselaer County schools are closed. Cara Durham schools in Greene County are closed. There's no AM pre-K and no AM BOCES in Caro. Catskill schools are closed in Greene County. Chatham schools in Columbia County are closed. The offices are opening at 11 a.m. at Chatham schools. The College of St. Rose is open. Day and evening classes are remote, though, so not really open. Employees must work remotely. Columbia Green Community College is closed today. Coxsackie Athens schools are closed today. East Greenbush schools in Rensselaer County are closed. Germantown schools in Columbia County are closed today. The Grapeville Christian School in Greene County is closed today. Greene County Transit is closed. There are no public buses running today. Greenville schools in Greene County are closed today. The Hawthorne Valley School in Columbia County is closed today. Hudson Valley Community College in Rensselaer County is delayed until 10 a.m. Classes delayed until 10 a.m. Employees report at 10 a.m. They will post updates as necessary. Ichabod Crane Schools in Kinderhook in Columbia County are closed today. The Lee Public Schools in Berkshire County are closed, as are the Lenox Schools in Berkshire County. Hudson City Schools in Columbia County are closed. Hunter Tannersville Schools are closed in Greene County. There are no after-school events at Hunter Tannersville today. Pittsfield Public Schools in Berkshire County are closed today. Quaestar 3 Noonan School in Durham in Greene County is closed. Ravina Queeman Selkirk Schools in Albany County are delayed 2 hours. There's no AM pre-K, no AM BOCES, and no AM childcare at the Ravina Queeman Selkirk Schools in southern Albany County. Saugerty Schools are closed. Skodak Schools in Rensselaer County are closed today. Taconic Hills Schools in Columbia County are closed today. Ulster Green Arc is open. There's no transportation and no buses running. That's in Catskill. Ulster Green Arc in Kingston is closed. There's no transportation, or Ulster transportation is canceled there. Wyndham Ashlett Jewett Schools in Greene County are closed today. Those are some of your closings and delays for Tuesday, February 28th.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Nick Reisman reports in New York State of Politics that the New York House Republicans on February 27th proposed a measure to stop Governor Kathy Hochul's budget proposal to use money from federal medical assistance percentage funds in the state budget that are usually sent to county governments in New York. Republican Mark Molinaro, who represents the 19th Congressional District, was one of those introducing the bill, saying, and I quote, "Congress intended federal Medicaid dollars to go directly to local governments for services that children, seniors, working moms, and our most vulnerable neighbors rely on," end quote. Hochul and state legislators have until the end of March to pass a budget for next year. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Paul Kirby reports in the Daily Freeman that there have been several recent reports of coyotes in the town of Poughkeepsie and Hyde Park, according to the Dutchess County Department of Behavioral and Community Health. And the State Department of Environmental Conservation believes that the coyotes' unusual behavior are consistent with animals being fed intentionally or unintentionally. The DEC urges citizens not to leave food outdoors or intentionally leave food for coyotes or other animals outdoors. January through March is when coyotes breed in New York State, and the animals are more territorial at this time of year. The DEC recommends not approaching wild animals, as they may be rabid. Do not feed them, make garbage inaccessible, and remove outside food sources. Anyone who sees a coyote should be aggressive and stand tall and hold out your arms, up or out, to look as large as possible. Then make loud noises if a coyote lingers, and wave your arms and throw sticks and stones. The NYSDEC Bureau of Wildlife asks anyone seeing repeated visits or odd behavior from coyotes to call them at 845-256-3098. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. Mid-Hudson News reports that this week, State Senator Rachel May introduced her Bigger, Better Bottle Bill that would increase deposits for cans and bottles from a nickel to a dime. The nickel was set in 1982, so it is a little behind inflation. Over 11 million tons of containers have been recycled in New York since the bottle bill became law, according to the Container Recycling Institute. May writes in the bill memo that, and I quote, "Raising the deposit to 10 cents will incentivize the public to return empty beverage containers, reduce litter, and provide additional income to individuals who collect and redeem such containers," end quote. Opponents of the bill claim that adds to the price inflation that customers recently faced. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. News 10 in Albany reports that on February 23rd, the city of Pittsfield announced the expansion of its downtown public Wi-Fi network. The Pittsfield free Wi-Fi signals now reach from the intersection of East and West Housatonic Streets and South Street North to the intersection of Linden Street and Maplewood Avenue and North Street. Pittsfield's Chief Information Officer Kevin Zawistowski said, and I quote, "The expanded network provides free wireless internet to those who need access to this resource while complementing our existing indoor public Wi-Fi access points," end quote. Read more about this story at the News 10 website. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather reports, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Tuesday, February 28th. Local early morning temperatures range from 22 degrees out at the edge of the territory in Roxbury to 28 degrees in Kinderhook. Regional average soil temperature is 34. Snow totals are in. We got 1.4 inches in Catskill, 2 in Copaic, 3.3 in Kingston. Most of the deed is done. Power outages were light and the roads are showing snowy and icy conditions across the whole listening region, according to road crews. Another inch and a half of snow is due to fall through the day, mostly in the morning. We get a high temperature of 33 degrees. Snow ends for everyone by dark. Overnight, temperatures dip to 20 degrees. Tomorrow, things warm up, hitting a high note of 42 at 2 p.m. Light rain will begin to fall just before dark and continue overnight. We get a low of 36. Thursday has a little lingering rain in the morning and a high temperature of 48. Friday, we get a storm, most likely with another few inches of snow in it. Let's see how that develops. Sunset today will be at 5:29 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:28 a.m. Looking way up, we see a grounding fault caused a reset on NASA's Discover spacecraft, and because of this, we might have missed that second CME, even though we did get G3-class storms and a deep aurora oval last night. X-class flare chances are up to 15%. Solar wind speed is currently 616.8 kilometers per second at 0.7. That's pretty low. Protons per milliliter. I hope that's a correct reading. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 2 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 6.6, storm level. The current sunspot number is 192, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And if you're sitting around on this snow day like we are, consider heading on over to WGXE.org. There's lots of fun things to check out. My favorite part is the donate button, or, as I like to call it, the hero generator. Just click on that button, drop some love, and enter our Hall of Adoration.
Audio, radio, audio, radio, audio, radio. Audio, radio, audio, radio, audio, radio, audio, radio. D-O, Re, D-O, Ah, D-O, Re, D-O, Ah, D-O, Re, D-O, Ah, D-O, Re, D-Ah, D-O, Re, D-Ah. D re D ah D re D ah D ah re D ah D ah re D ah D oh re D ah.
Next, we hear a track from the 2003 compilation album, The Shape of Jazz to Come. This is Antipop Consortium with Monstro City.
Midday gravity. Few and far between. The pain leaks from the drips in the ceiling. Filling the buckets overflowing with self-pity. What was I to ponder why? Reasons are led hand in hand by the smoke of her cigarette, imparting ways like strokes in her hair, gentle against her cheek. Gentle against her cheek. Strokes of her hair, imparting ways like the smoke of her cigarette. Reasons are led astray hand in hand by what was I to ponder why? Overflowing with self-pity. Filling the buckets from the drips in the ceiling. The pain leaks few and far between. Envy at poem, this started I. Most events of sequence with thee began discourse to the relevant. Love was there first. Entanglement as itself reconfigured. Soon which love, folly sad, thee into turned, turn in. Which entrapment, face we win. Any more here, live, don't love. Irrelevant is, was that love thee so?
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The president made trying to find the origins of COVID a priority right when he came into office, and he's got a whole of government effort designed to do that. There is not a consensus right now in the U.S. government about exactly how COVID started.
Despite a report from the U.S. Energy Department saying COVID-19 possibly came from a lab leak in China, the National Security Council's John Kirby said the intelligence community hasn't reached a consensus on the origins of the virus. But when there is a definitive answer, Americans will know. The United Nations is meeting to outline a climate change loss and damage fund. While the fund was established during COP27, this meeting will determine how it will operate, where the money will come from, and how it will be dispersed. While the U.S. is experiencing its own multi-billion-dollar weather events, smaller island nations like Tuvalu or the Maldives will sink in the next century due to rising sea levels. Sitash Matapa with the National Wildlife Federation describes why countries in the global south need the fund.
The hope for the Loss and Damage Fund is that it doesn't replicate previous funds and financial frameworks. It takes into account not just the economic impact, such as damage to like homes or crops.
She adds this fund also needs to take into account the mental and emotional trauma these disasters have on people. China has opposed contributing since they're viewed as a developing country by the UN. Some say China has worked hard at eliminating that label, and its climate goals should reflect that. The Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case that could determine the future of identity theft law. Dubin versus United States, centers on whether someone is committing aggravated identity theft when they say someone else's name as they commit an offense. Some justices on the court say the vague language could result in smaller offenses becoming federal charges because they're defined as identity theft. Justice Sonia Sotomayor gave an example of how this could happen.
A parent lists their child as a dependent and lies about child care services. There's no way to exempt that out because under the government's broad definition of the statute, because they use the child's name to commit a fraud on the government.
At the G20 summit in India, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen addressed the global economy and how current events have shaped it, and said the U.S. economy has overcome great odds.
In the United States, our economy remains resilient. Year-on-year headline inflation has moderated over the past few months as supply chain pressures have eased and global imbalances have subsided.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In Idaho last year, there was one conviction of an ineligible 70-year-old felon on probation who registered to vote and voted. The Conservative Heritage Foundation's database shows another conviction for a 62-year-old man who voted twice in 2017. But that seems to be enough evidence for the Idaho legislature to make it harder for everyone to vote, particularly for students, Native Americans, and working citizens. Last week, the Idaho House passed HB 124 to remove student IDs as a form of ID for voting. It does authorize the state to issue a state identification card instead, but additional forms of ID would be limited to an Idaho driver's license, federal passport or photo ID card, a tribal photo ID card, or a firearms permit. A House committee also recommended HB 75, which would eliminate the no-excuse absentee voting system in place since 1970 and limit absentee voters to the excuses of disability, illness, work commitments, or being out of state for religious reasons. Yet another bill, HB 54, would eliminate student IDs, but also eliminate sworn affidavits in lieu of an ID. Such restrictions target more frequent users of Election Day registration. For links to the bills and an analysis of how such voter ID restrictions are wielded as a targeted voter suppression tool, visit AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and Philip Grant up in Rensselaer County and I are bringing you the WGXC Congressional Report, full of stories about what the candidates and representatives from the New York 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional districts have been up to this past week. Go to WGXC.org in the WGXC newsroom for complete coverage of your congressional representative.
Mid-Hudson News reports that Mark Molinaro may now represent the 19th Congressional District, but he keeps getting involved in Dutchess County politics in the 18th Congressional District. Molinaro endorsed Chief Assistant District Attorney Matt Weishaupt for District Attorney in the fall election, as incumbent William Grady is not seeking re-election. Molinaro lives in Dutchess County out of his congressional district and used to be Dutchess County Executive. Molinaro said of Weishaupt that he, and I quote, has always put the safety of our community, needs of his fellow prosecutors, well-being of law enforcement, and lives of victims first, end quote. Recently, Molinaro also endorsed Sue Serino to take over his old post as executive in Dutchess County. Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News. The Troy Record reports that Representative Paul Tonko recently announced $20,403,104 in federal funding for transit agencies in the Capital Region. The money comes from the bipartisan infrastructure law and by congressional passage of the FY 2023 omnibus spending bill, which Tonko voted for. Tonko said, and I quote, "Every day in our Capital Region, public transit connects thousands of hardworking people to their jobs, their schools, their hospitals, and their communities as a whole," end quote. The Democrat represents Albany County and much of the rest of the Capital Region in the 20th Congressional District. Read more about this story in the Troy Record. Andrea Mako reports for Porcupine Soup that Congressperson Mark Molinaro holds a town hall meeting February 23rd at 10 a.m. at the Catskill Firehouse at 1 Central Avenue. The meeting was announced with little notice for the public to attend. Molinaro represents the 19th Congressional District, and this will be his first local chance for citizens to question him. Read the full story in Porcupine Soup. Taylor A. McNeil in the Daily Gazette reports that Representative Paul Tonko wants to ban all electronic and sports gambling advertising. But since a total ban may not pass Congress, Tonko says, and I quote, "We're open to any discussion. You know, I don't want to reject any kind of thoughts people would have on this, but our intent is to really address that targeting, the tremendous outlay of advertising, the targeting, and the potential damage," end quote. In 2018, the U.S. Supreme Court allowed sports betting in most parts of the country. And in 2019, New York voted to allow bets, and online sports betting began in the state last year. Tonko, who represents Albany County and the rest of the 20th Congressional District, is concerned about sports betting websites targeting gambling addicts. In 2021, the National Gambling Helpline Network experienced a 45% annual increase in calls. Where will Tonko get support for his measure? Locally, Democrat Assemblyperson Angelo Santa Barbara of Rotterdam said, and I quote, "Sports gambling regulation is a state issue and decisions should be made here in New York State and not in Washington." The State Assembly's Racing and Wagering Committee worked hard to include many safeguards in enacting legislation, end quote. Republican Congressperson Elise Stefanik didn't respond to a request for comment on the issue. The American Gaming Association calls Tonko's bill unconstitutional. New York State took in $909 million in tax and licensing fee-based revenue from mobile sports betting in 2022. Read the full story in the Daily Gazette. Nicholas Fandos reports in the New York Times that the Democrat House Majority PAC this week will unveil a $45 million fund for winning back four seats that Republicans flipped in New York last year. One of the districts they are targeting is the 19th, where Republican Mark Molinaro won last fall. Republicans now hold a slim five-seat majority in the House of Representatives, and many observers have said that is because of the losses in New York. Mike Smith, who leads the Political Action Committee, said, and I quote, "The path to the majority runs through New York. It's not just us seeing it. It is the Republican Party seeing it. It's every donor around the country seeing it," end quote. The national money will be helpful, as New York Democrats are still bickering about the losses. Progressives blame the conservative chair of the state party, Jay Jacobs, while he said the Republicans won by focusing on crime in many advertisements. The Democratic PAC spent around $13 million in New York last year, while Republican Congressional Leadership Fund spent at least $21 million. In a sign that the Republicans are also taking New York Congressional 2024 elections very seriously, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is planning to make an early fundraising stop in the state in March. Read more about this story in the New York Times.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
The Times Union recently wrote an article that outlined some of the ongoing conflicts of interest that are involved in the town of Queamans, particularly with George McHugh, who's now the town supervisor, previously been the former general counsel for the Port of Queamans, which has often been a point of controversy in the town, and particularly with this owner, Carver Larraway. And so we're going to do a couple of segments in the next week or so. But we're joined by Sarah Brooksma, who's a local resident. I noticed she was a former candidate, you know, for the town board. But Sarah, what were some of the key points that you thought was really important in the Times Union story about George McHugh and his power and the fact he gets hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, from, I guess, the county sheriff and local town boards to be a town attorney? It seems to become a quite powerful person while remaining perhaps pretty tight with the Port of Queamans.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the biggest takeaways is that the corruption that we're seeing now is not new. It's part of what's been going on for the past several years. And there's certainly no, there's no surprise that it's happening as soon as he got into office. So when he started, you know, running for his campaign, you know, this was all part of the big plan, you know, allowing the port to take over. He's got, you know, really close ties with Carver Larraway. And I can certainly get into those specifics. So it's not exactly, you know, new news that McHugh's oldest son works for Carver Larraway. McHugh's ex-wife is Carver's current wife. Another issue, you know, which is rather strange, is that Brandon Lefevre, he is a current town board member for the town of Queamans. He also was newly appointed the deputy supervisor for the town. But Brandon is also related to McHugh now through marriage. So Brandon's sister married George's son. And Brandon also works for Carver. So if you can follow kind of like between all those dots, you'll see that the connections are just incredibly tight. And there's it's really hard for anybody to kind of infiltrate this network that they've made.
Well, you know, I don't live locally, but I've, you know, followed news stories over the years. And sort of a quick summary is, you know, sort of the owner of the Port of Queamans has a reputation of being not particularly good for his workers and or the environment, a little bit on the, I guess, conflict of interest step aside. He is part of the $200 million that the state's going to provide primarily to Port of Albany, but some to Queamans, about this, you know, wind turbine type of situation. But the two stories I remember coming out over the last couple of years was one initially some type of proposal for ash to come in off into the port and then being put in the landfill, and that was defeated, hazardous ash. And then, you know, the cement plant there in Ravenna trying to import, you know, through the port, tires to burn at the cement plant in Ravenna. And, you know, the local residents passing rules to try to prevent that. And then, you know, McHugh running for re-election and trying to sort of, you know, overturn that. But what are some of the other, you know, I guess, sort of town level political issues that continue to percolate?
You know, one thing that is kind of a town political issue, but it's like, it kind of runs even below the political scene, or maybe it really is the political scene, is that anybody with a difference of opinion is completely shut out. Also, if you are not from the area, you're an outsider, your opinion is discounted, you are, you know, treated as other than. So myself and many other people that I've really grown very close with in the community, we are not, like, our opinion is not valued. So we're not a part of their club. We weren't from here. you know, even though I grew up just 15 minutes south of the area. So that's kind of a disturbing issue.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I live in the town of Post-Kilminster County, and we have a lot of the same thing. And I just remember being at a town, last town, I used to be on the town board, but being at a town board meeting recently and my neighbor being criticized because he was a newcomer. He had only lived here 30 years. And why did he think at the 30 years his voice, should be heard?
Wow.
Are there particular issues in front of the town board that are up for consideration at the moment? Or what are some of the other conflict of interest that, either in the Times Union story or not, that you think should be highlighted?
One of the things that I think is worth noting is that before McHugh even took office, he absolved the Queeman's Conservation Committee. And that was one of the reasons that I actually got into the political scene in the area, because I was really interested in this conservation committee and the work that they were doing. And George McHugh knew right away that he had to dissolve that committee, who was working on, assembling this whole map of our area and all of the natural resources. And he really took the wind out of the sails for a lot of us people who, value the environment. And what he did was he just spread a lot of lies about what the committee was doing or capable of. So that's really unfortunate. And that really brings us to where we are today, because in 2020, he put through an addendum on the comprehensive plan. So while the majority of the community and, of course, the world was really suffering through COVID and, just everything that came with that, he goes through and he puts through this addendum for the town, which now bypasses all of the environmental protections that were in the comprehensive plan from 2006. And he put a lot more precedence on industrial growth and valuing industrial, growth, really.
That's a way to bring tax dollars into town and jobs, but you find that you're paying often more in taxes to provide the services and you're getting in terms of tax returns. And the amount of local jobs, usually doesn't materialize anywhere near the level it was promised, or they don't hire local people.
Oh, right. I mean, there are certainly local people that are hired by these companies, but I don't think it's as great a volume as they like to make us think. And I don't have the data on that. But our taxes have actually increased since McHugh has been in office. But he will over and over and over again tell you that he's decreased them. And it's a flat out lie. I think our taxes increased by, I might misquote this, but I think it was 5-something% last year.
So we only have about a minute left. Often in these small towns, one of the areas you see a lot of conflict of interest is with the planning board and zoning board, which are often very much aligned with the local developers, not the needs of local residents. How is the planning? You mentioned the comprehensive plan, of course, is a problem. But what is the planning, oversight in the city in like 40 seconds?
Basically right now it's what McHugh wants, and he's got the people in place to do what he wants. And he knows he either has people that are being paid by him or that are too afraid to speak up. Those are the people that he has in decision-making spots. So with the town planning board, he has combined the planning and zoning board to consolidate what the businesses have to do to get any, approvals or permits. He's got the people in place that are, big business owners or that he knows he can smooth talk. So that's one of the other things that he does.
We've been talking with Sarah Plusma.
Site is cleanairalbanycounty.org.
And this has been Mark Denley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Next is 2021 new music from Stereolab. The song is called Dimension M2.
The WGXC Newsroom. This is the WGXC News Update. Liz Montgomery reports in Porcupine Soup that the Greene County Legislature has voted unanimously to spend $2,195,000 from the American Rescue Plan Act for high-speed fiber internet on approximately 112 miles of unserved roadways in the county. Most of those roads are in the towns of Catskill, Durham, Windham, Ashland, and Prattsville. The money goes to Mid-Hudson Cable, Margaretville Telephone Company, and Charter Communications.
Greene County officials, in a news release touting the spending, claimed that, and I quote, with the completion of this effort, virtually all existing Greene County addresses that currently have electric service on grid will have access to high-speed internet, end quote. Officials did not say when the broadband service would be available, but said construction may take place in 2023 and 2024. Braga Justin reports in the Times Union that in Rensselaer County recently, Republican Representative Elise Stefanik said New York Republicans are starting a congressional caucus to focus on security concerns at the northern border. They aren't proposing building a wall yet, but they want something done, as the U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency says outposts in Vermont and New York have reported a sharp uptick in crossings there. The Vermont outpost recorded 367 encounters with migrants in January. That's more than the total number of encounters during the month of January for the last 12 years combined. Stefanik has been fairly quiet on the subject, just tweeting vague statements such as, and I quote, border security is national security, end quote, on February 25th. Stefanik also claims her office has been in touch with families who have documented migrant activities on their properties. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nancy Kern reports in Columbia Green Media that the FindByPlate.com website has named the Taconic State Parkway one of the deadliest roads in the United States. The Taconic State Parkway runs between Kensico Dam Plaza in Westchester County and Chatham in Columbia County. The story says the roadway was, and I quote, commissioned during the administration of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the Taconic was designed to be a scenic road connecting the numerous state parks in the Hudson River Valley region, end quote. The story, however, does not cite any accident statistics to back up the ranking, but does say that in 2021, the New York State Department of Transportation improved a part of the Taconic in Putnam County that was previously averaging one accident per month. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that the New York Association of Convenience Stores is trying to stop Governor Kathy Hochul's proposals to increase taxes on cigarettes and ban flavored products such as menthol cigarettes. Hochul proposes to raise cigarette taxes from $4.35 to $5.35 in her state budget. New York Association of Convenience Stores President Ken Sopras says of Hochul's proposal, and I quote, what it won't do is stop smoking, and the more New Yorkers hear the facts, the more they realize that prohibition doesn't work, end quote. Anti-tobacco organizations have an opposite view of the proposals, saying they will help significantly reduce smoking-linked illness such as cancer. A Siena College poll released February 27th showed that a majority of voters support both proposals by wide margins. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast for Tuesday, February 28th. And we begin each renewable weather forecast with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Mobil in Palenville has gas at $3.39 a gallon, the lowest price according to the Gas Buddy website. The air quality forecast is a 41, which is considered low for Tuesday. The UV index is just a 1, also considered low. The water temperature in the Hudson River is just above 38 degrees. And on February 28th, over the last 10 years, it's averaged just above 36 degrees. So we're about 2 degrees warmer than the recent average. National Weather Service in Albany says the snow continues until 2 p.m. It could be heavy at times with a high of 33 and an east wind 5 to 9 miles per hour. Wind gusts could be as high as 22 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Tuesday night, it should be cloudy with a low around 19 and a northwest wind 7 to 13 miles per hour. Then on Wednesday, the prediction is there is a 30% chance of rain or snow showers between 2 and 3 p.m., and then it could turn to sleet. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high near 40, and Wednesday night, a low around 33 is predicted. Thursday, there's a 30% chance of showers before 1 p.m., with cloudy skies, a high of 43 and a northwest wind 7 to 14 miles per hour, and then Thursday night should be mostly cloudy with a low around 24. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears.